Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Something Something Podcast. My name is Eric Kasloff, and with me, as always, is Larry Sands. How's it going, Larry?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing much, much better now. If you've listened to our previous episode, Something Something About Eric Almost Dying, you'll know the hardships and trials I've been going through. I am fully back to myself now. No tubes in my leg, no more tubes in my arm. And I can leave the house on my own now, which I'm pretty excited about without being afraid.
Which is
Well, I
very
mean, the
good.
government is still following me constantly, the surveillance, because I know the truth. But other than that, I'm good.
You know, Eric, I have to apologize because it feels like every time I hear you talk about, you dying, which is not a funny subject,
Yes,
but
it is. The fact that I didn't die and the way I almost died.
And the name that we named the actual episode. So I'm not insensitive because obviously if you guys have heard the episode, everybody that's listening, you'll realize, I mean, it was a heavy thing. And I think that's one of the things about being able to live through something and being able to look back and going, you know what? It wasn't funny when I was doing it or
No,
going through it.
the nurse stuff was hilarious.
Now everybody's going to want to go to NYU to go in to be in the hospital to see all the hot model / nurses that they've hired
But
from the
no, well,
modeling
I'm just
agency.
going to tell a quick sample before we get to where we'll talk about our guests.
Okay. Yeah.
So in the episode, I talk about how I live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
NYU is the best. If you, God forbid, anything ever happens to a family member of yours, but if you can get to NYU, they're the best doctors in the world. So while I'm in there, I have tubes in me. I can't get off my bed, ladies and gentlemen, and I have to relieve myself at times. And I'm honestly convinced that when models in New York aren't modeling, they give them nursing degrees. And there were occasions where a nurse, a very attractive nurse, had to clean me. And we just talk about the awkwardness of that situation. And to me, that's what I'm going to look back on. Not the horrible pain I went through, not almost getting addicted to Dilaudid. I'm going to think about the funny nurse story. So, Larry, while I was there, I love reading. Unlike you, I'm literate.
Right. And I
So
don't, yeah.
I love reading. And I especially love stories that take place, I think we've talked about this, in the South, places like Texas, Nashville, things like that. And our guest has a book that has, we were talking about the cover. So Larry, tell everybody about our guest and a little bit about his book, his awesome book, which I can't wait to check out.
Yes, absolutely. Our guest this episode is Mr. Tom Harrison IV. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thank you very much. I'm excited to be on.
Yes, this is absolutely amazing. Your book is a memoir and it is a true story. It's called From Punishment to Peace, Road Trips to Forgiveness. So one of the things that kind of stuck out to me is the harsh realness of your book. How was it? What was it like writing your book and being so open and honest about it?
Well, thank you, Larry, Eric, for letting me be on your show. I appreciate that. And to follow Eric is going to be like, who's the coach that follows Nick Saban and Bill Belichick after that story that Eric shared about the nurse?
Nurses,
plural. Nurses,
you got a lot to live up to.
That's right. Gosh, Larry, can you ask us that question again? I was so excited about trying to be cute that I guess I wasn't paying attention to your question.
No, it, you know, that's part of what Eric and I do. You know, we love to have fun. We love to talk about our experiences in life and our creative life, which is what our podcast is really about the creative life. And it's highly, highly interesting when we come across somebody with a book. And I mean, really, honestly, all creative things are based in the author's reality, whether that you're a musician or a director or writer, things like that. But I always find it highly, highly interesting is when somebody actually puts it on paper as a book in book form. And I'm always interested to hear about the actual process of putting down, probably actually just like what Eric went through and what you've gone through, right? Your experiences in this horrible situation, right? Or situations. And what was that like for you to revisit that and put that in a book form for not just your close family to read and to understand it, but for everybody that loves books or interested in things like that. What was that like?
Well, again, thank you, Larry. It probably is very similar to Eric and his kind of telling us some of the funny parts of it, but it's the transparency that Eric shared that this story is about that and the reasons why the journey even took place that when you're in the middle of it, you really don't know what's happening. You just know that there is something here, at least as far as the book is concerned. There's something here. In fact, the journey of the two characters wasn't meant to be a book. It was meant to be a direction towards understanding, which could have led to healing and thus what I'm calling peace. It was only after these journeys, these road trips that you refer to in the title of the book, started to occur that started looking at this and go, I've got to, alongside experiencing this story, I've got to now do what I can to turn this into a book. So I walked away from my profession. I spent 2 years at Emory University studying creative writing. I'm a business guy in my day job, and I've spent all my career in writing and writing various whatever the businesses were telling me to write, and I was able to articulate both verbally and in writing my ability to move from one point to the next point in these businesses, but to have a story and then create it in such a way to deliver it to an audience. I wanted to do what I can to get as close to perfection, though no one can, but to get as close to perfection as I could. So I really jumped into the whole writing style 2+ years, and as I said, at Emory, and that's what the kind of the drive in saying this real life story that is really opening up some really deep dark wounds. I've got to make some pretty hard decisions, just like Eric just had to do about his leg, to say. Do I really want the public to know this? This is a room in my house that I've now got to open up the door. And do I let people in to see it? And in reality, the end point was there's healing from this story. And if I can assist one person through this story to find where that end point is, that peace, then it's my obligation to be as transparent as I possibly can to show the journey that got there. And that's really kind of where it all began.
So would you say that in this is something I've learned, and I want to ask you, this is an overall life thing, that true strength is admitting your weaknesses and showing them to the world. During the process of the writing this book and re-remembering everything, because now you're on the other side of it, what was it like showing? Was it easy or hard to show the weakness that you've gone through? Or the hardships overall.
Thank you, Eric, for the question. I think it's like when when the Hoover Dam needs to release water, it starts small, so it's kind of feels like it's being forced through. But as things kind of pass, the water starts to really flow in a really big way. So what's my point? Once this began the process of opening up, and these two primary characters have very extreme lives, but in very opposite points in the spectrum. They get together after 2 decades, so they don't even know how to talk to each other, let alone start to open up and share
Wow.
and discover each other's pains. But once it starts, it's that men are really difficult to do this. We're all guys here. We're the macho guy of sex. We don't want to show our weaknesses. We want to show our strengths always. And yet, through this journey, I've become really a believer in the fact that vulnerability is the greatest strength.
Amen.
Yeah.
100%.
And it has to start with a step, and it can turn into a marathon before it's all
Yeah.
said and done. And it's that first step. It's that taking that step, and the next step is easier, and then the next step is easier. And then you get into a cadence, and then you can't stop. And that's really what the essence of this story is all about, is we started dealing with our own situations very slowly. But then once that trust began to build, and the fact that we were pulling this out, and we were beginning to see the benefits from the very beginning of just of sharing, once that happened, it became much easier. It just almost became hypnotic, and so motivating just to keep doing. It
Yeah,
was great.
yeah. I think it's, I think, and this is kind of weird to say, because when you're a creative person, I know when I teach acting and have taught acting, but this is true in the creative field anyway, because your true self, who we really want to be, comes out in our creativity. And I always told actors and actresses to be your authentic self. You have to put away the ways of the world, because society tells us that men can't cry, men can't have any kind of feelings about anything, and if they are, then that's a sign of weakness. And the same way with girls, women, right? They can't be strong, they can't be tough, or else they're, I mean, what they are, right?
Right,
And
exactly.
what they're called, like a bitch or something. And I think it's kind of hard for people that aren't in like any creative fields, for people to understand why it's so hard. 'Cause when you hear like actors and actresses go through a hard time because of social media and things that are said, it's really hard when you put yourself out there and you're open and honest, and all of a sudden people are really judgmental about your open and un honesty. And just to add to what you were talking about, I mean, it's absolutely true to be open and honest, and just hope for the best sometimes, because you
Most of
never know
us,
how people are gonna react.
exactly, most of us are trained to mimic somebody as a mission to be something other than someone's child. I mean,
Yeah,
to be an
yeah.
adult, we have to choose, do we want to be a fireman? Well, as a representative of a fireman, there might be a fire. There's a fireman right down the street, and you see him and go, I want to be just like him. So we're all trained, whether it be we're hardwired or we're pointed in that direction through education or parents or other influencers, to mimic what somebody that represents where we want to go. And that's
Right.
fine, well, and good, because then we have to create that, admittedly, I'm sure we all did, like actors, we have to create a persona
Yeah.
of who we are to and develop the path to get there.
Yeah.
Well, by the time, and that's been the really part of this whole story, is that both of these main characters, to overcome the levels of abuse that they occurred that occurred in their youth for the first 15, 18 years, and then they were thrust out to be adults. They had to figure out how to be adults. They had to
Yeah.
find some way to be an adult. And both,
Yeah.
though again, very different ways, failed miserably until later in life, where they realized, we don't want, this is not what we wanted to be. How do we become what we want to be?
Yeah.
And so it's breaking away from that mimicking of that we spend much of us, many of us spend much of our lives doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Tom, I just realized we kind of delve into chapter 5 of the book without talking about chapter 1. So for those of us, you know, our listeners, explain as best you can without giving anything away what the book's about.
Sure.
You know, like give us the meat hooks to pull everybody in.
Happy to. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. So this is a true story about two same age family members, an uncle and a nephew. And there's even a story as to why they're same age, but gotta leave something for the reader. And they reconnect after 2 decades of not seeing each other. They're kind of later on in life. And the uncle character, who unfortunately suffered physical and sexual abuse and emotional abuse from his father and others, got into drugs and alcohol very early, became addicted, and spent virtually all his life in those addictions, was homeless much of his life, and had gone through the judicial system at least 4 dozen times. So this was a very difficult, lovely character, warm, great guy, intelligent, but he was stuck in kind of the inner city lifestyle, unfortunately. And we're talking about Memphis, where we were both born and raised. And I, alongside him was his nephew, me. And I had two very young parents. So they were 16 when I was born. And my father, unfortunately, suffered, and looking back, suffered from being bipolar, was a heavy narcissist, had some alcoholism, had been married 6 times in his life. But at the time, he didn't want to be a father. And as you can imagine, being a narcissist, he didn't want to have a child at all, and did not want to have anything to do with it. And unfortunately, because of the bipolar and the anger that he carried, he kind of diminished the self-worth of the nephew, me, to such a degree that I was a nothing. I didn't know what I was going to do in life at the age of 16, and had no direction. The grades were barely good enough. But somehow, through the grace of a lot of things happening, I scratched and clawed my way into college, and then became an overachiever, and used money as that measurement stick of achievement. So I became the nephew character became addicted to materialism, hedonism, several other all legal but isms, to where, ironically, even though we were 180 degrees different in our lives, the direction we were in our life, we're at the exact same point in our life. We had a hole in our soul. We didn't know how we weren't happy with, we weren't satisfied. Sure, you buy a car, you get happy. You're happy for about a week or two, and then you go, okay, it's a car.
Yeah.
But we were not at peace. Neither one of us were. And we didn't know why we got to where we were. We didn't know why we were angry. We were frustrated about many things in life. But we had come to the same point at the same time, where he said, we have to be different. We got to figure out a way to be different than what life and what we have taken from life turned out to be. So.
Wow. I'm hooked. I'll be, you know, trying to beg you for an autographed copy or something. It kind of sounds a lot like one of my favorite books and TV movies, Tuesdays with Maury.
I love that book. I love that book greatly. I've read that. Mitch did a wonderful job in portraying his life, but also the his teachers and really kind of his experiences, his road trips, basically, and seeing his instructor that he cared so much about. So I hang that book up there pretty high as ones that are one that would influence me and how I wrote my story.
You know, one thing you said that really, you know, was the home run for me is about finding peace. Mm-hmm. Because the older we get, we learn that emotions are a roller coaster. Happiness is, you know, an emotion, but peace and being, you know, I come from a church background. Joyful is a decision that you make. Like, you know, I hate using myself as an example. While I was in the hospital, you know, yeah, were there times when I cried and felt depressed? Yeah. But I also kept thinking, I'm still a somewhat young guy. I'm on the wrong end of 40, But I'm still doing, so I just decided, to be peaceful in the storm and find the joy in that. I'm gonna be going home. If you can
Yeah.
walk out of a hospital on your own legs, that's a really good thing.
That is so true, Eric, and I agree 100%. Dr. Martin Luther King said something very profound that has always stuck with me. He said that life is not about longevity, it's about quality. And in my story, I link in the fact that our punishments, we all get punished. Life punishes us. You've been punished in your health recently.
Yes.
I still think about it. When I was 18-year-old, I got rejected by this beautiful girl that I just couldn't stop thinking about. I
Was
asked
she a
her back.
nurse?
Yeah, she might very well be. Anyway, but there are punishments that we get prime, and if they're from our parents, let's say, or from
Right.
really heavy influencers in our youth, those are really hard to shake off. And I think the point here is that we all carry punishments. And I think punishments are the antithesis of the quality that Dr. Martin Luther King was referring to in life. And so figuring out that you are carrying those punishments and you're dealing with them, and maybe in such a way where in both characters' case in this book, the punished, as we got older, became the punishers. We inherited some of the traits of those punishers as we tried to triangulate into what we thought were very high quality lives. At least for me, anyway. He got joy in being in drugs for so long, but obviously that was fleeting. But it's the ability to say we own some of what we've inherited, and we become punishers to ourselves and to others that eventually, at some point, that walk alongside us in our lives. And so the story is about trying to identify that and going through the path of trying to reverse that, or in essence, getting ourselves to a peaceful level. So.
This is the probably the fascinating, and it never ceases to amaze me, which I go back to when I first mentioned, introduce you at the top of the show. And I love talking about your book, but it's the experience that you've had. Actually, we've all had, because the interesting part is, as you talk about your book, I'm thinking about my life and the people that I know and how I grew up, right? And I think that's one of the things about the honest, true, creative, like, things with your book that speak to true stories of growing up. And it's so true, because when we grow up with our parents, whether we like it or not, we learn from our parents, right or wrong, and you can pick the good, you can pick the bad, but at some point, I think once we grow up and we move away from that, I think we start to realize that through communication with everybody, and if you do take a good, not a hard look, I mean, depending on your situation, you really look hard and go, why is this like this? And it's you do become a changed person when you look and you try very, very hard to pick out the things that we learn from our youth, and we start to change those things based on us, based on our experiences with people. And we do several different podcasts, and we've had psychiatrists on, talking about issues when we live with our parents and when we grow up, and we have those, we at some point we come at a crossroads, I think, of do I continue to go through what I'm going through and feeling what I'm feeling with my emotional self because I learned this, or am I really recognizing this is like a really deep episode all of a sudden?
Oh,
And
that's
I
a
guess,
good way. A good way there. Oh, in a very good way, yeah.
and this will go like for a question for you, because at some point in real life, we all have to choose, do I want to continue down this road to kind of blame mom and dad or how I grew up with my aunts and uncles and everybody? Or do I look at people and start to really do a hard look at the things that are happening now and put it into perspective and go, I need to change this about myself? Did you go through that? And does your book, you know, not to give it away, but did you realize early on or later on that you had to change things for yourself in order to survive, really?
That's a wonderful question. And I wished that I had the emotional intelligence to have kind of over time, slowly come to the conclusion that I had to change thought processes, yeah. Change how I saw myself and change how I acted to others. I wish I had that strength. What had happened to me was this continuing saga of, I'm not liking myself, but I can't get off the treadmill long enough to figure it out intellectually. Yeah. And case in point, I've been through one marriage. I was married I got married a second time. And I'd gone through an incredibly positive run. Like I said, the nephew character myself, I had everything that this world in a life could ever want. I traveled all over the world. I lived all over the country. I've done everything I could done. I've accomplished career-wise everything. I got all the education I can need. And yet I had anger and I had frustration, and the things I was buying would not fulfill that. Again, love a new car. I'll forget about it in 2 weeks. And so what ended up happening, Larry, was and Eric, you appear to be spiritual at a minimum, Christian potentially.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, definitely.
I commend
we
that.
Both are, yeah.
So I'm going to tell you kind of the Christian side, the miraculous side of the story that I do want to share that's in the book, and it really gets into detail. And it's real simple. God woke me up. And so three things had to happen. And they happened in a very short order. I said, okay, God. No, really, four things. God goes, okay, if you're not going to get it by me dripping on you, you're going to get it by me pouring gallons of whatever on you, and so that I get your attention. So this all happened in very short order. I had my own business firm, an investment firm in Atlanta with a partner. We woke up one day and we decided that it needed to be, that we were closing. It wasn't quite what we thought it was going to be. So we closed the firm. I didn't have an office to go to. Then my second marriage fails. And as I mentioned earlier, my father had been married six times. And though I worshiped the guy, I wanted to be the antithesis of who he was, because I wanted to be a better person, a better husband, a better father. And so, but my second marriage ends, so I didn't have a home to go to. The third thing was that the object of my obsession to prove my father wrong, that I was not, quote unquote, not worth the lead to blow myself to hell, which is what I learned, what he told me almost daily for 18 years, that I have overcome that and then some. He dies. All of a sudden he dies. So that my obsession to prove something to this world had stopped. I had to end. And then fourth, back to the Christian side of this, I was fortunate enough to meet a man. He runs a small ministry in North Atlanta, and he's one of about three or four people. And I'm kind of sensing that I'm getting it from you guys too, but when you run into someone and you just see their face, they don't have to say a word. And you know that they're at a peaceful point in their life. You know that they got whatever they got. Then you start going, you know what? I sense this. Tell me, you know, who are you? What are you doing? How'd you get there? And of course, 99 times out of 100, that's going to be more of a Christian leaning. Yeah. And so they'll tell you the story how they got there. And so I gravitated and heard this guy's story, and I miraculously, his background, you know, he was at a big Fortune 50 company. He was head of marketing. He was traveling all over the world. He was making all sorts of money. He thought that was his mission. in life. And then he woke up one day feeling the same way. He goes off on a silent retreat for a weekend, comes back crying for the first time in decades. And he says, I have to walk away from everything. I've now found my purpose. I found Christ. And so he walks away from his perfect, comfortable life and starts a ministry with nothing. And 25 years later, he's just done some amazing, 20, 25 years later, he's done some amazing work, including pointing me in the direction and being a spiritual guide for me. So him coming into my life in the midst of those three other things, guys, I'm sorry, if you don't believe in God, that's amazing level of just things coming together with such low likelihood. But I'm believing that that was God's way of saying, I'm going to change your environment. Because if you want to change this for yourself, if you want to be a better person, if you want that peace, we've got to clear the decks. We've got to push all that stuff that's been a distraction anyway. Yeah. And you've got to find your way to peace. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Amen. Wow. Have you ever done any public speaking? Because I think you would make a great one.
Wow. Yeah.
I have.
You've got the way your choice of words and the way you carry yourself. You would make a great public speaker at events and stuff.
Thank you. I've spent, even though I'm very analytical and spent a lot of time, I've gotten into my career with more of knowing how numbers have a language, and I know how to speak that language. I know how to present it to people who aren't as knowledgeable in that area. I evolved into more of a sales and marketing role in the latter half of my career, and learned to be in front of crowds of 10 to 100 and just presenting the capabilities of the companies that I've represented. And so I've done it. I've done a lot of it. It's primarily one-on-one, like what we're doing right now, but it's been a lot of the other, but it's not been formalized. I've not gone out and gone on speaking tours. I love to go out on a speaking tour on the book. So anybody in your audience, gentlemen,
heck yeah,
might have, and I'll stop there. But no, I appreciate that. I've always wanted to craft that, because again, I've learned this later in life, and it goes back to the book. You can know a lot, and you think you might have something to show or tell someone, but until you have the ability to really get into how they think and how they would be receiving the message, it's going to be hard to really be able to communicate in a way where the other side's going to be able to embrace it. And so, so thank you for that. I don't do it formally, but I've been doing it career-wise and informally for a couple of decades now.
Well, I gotta say, about when it comes to one-on-one, whenever I meet people who use somebody's name while they're speaking, that always means a lot to me, because it shows the person you're giving them the individual attention, and you do a great job at pulling someone in to a conversation with you. So I really enjoyed that with you today, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, I do have to say, I don't know. And I find myself, I like the philosophical aspect of our conversation, and particularly your book. And I can tell you, this is from experience, when we ask for something, if you're a believer, if you're a Christian, and you ask the Lord for something and you really want it, the Lord's going to be like, all right, are you sure? Are you sure you want this?
What's that thing? Be careful what you pray for.
Right. Because the Lord he'll be like, okay, I'm going to give it to you the way I want you to have it. And then it's just like what you said, in order for me to get what I ask for and really, 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 really want to do, the Lord goes, I'm going to clear everything and build it back up the way I want it. And
I believe
y'all
that,
go ahead.
Larry. Yeah, I thank you. I that's part of it, because we've been talking about the end point. We're talking about peace.
Yeah.
To get to peace, you've got to wash out a lot of dirty laundry.
You
got to
go through it, yeah.
And in this journey, in this book, with these two characters, we had to face both our own individual wrongdoers that ended up helping us create to be our own versions of wrongdoers. And it became painful. It became... Yeah. eye-opening. There was a lot of sharing, a lot of opening up. There were a lot of characters that we, but the both character, I mean, the other family members that both these characters truly loved that have long since passed, that we were beginning to uncover as to the atrocities that were happening to them. And it became so painful to pull this together that there were many times we were in tears, but we saw some hope in ourselves through this journey. And though we couldn't go back and make those bad things that happened to others and including ourselves, we couldn't reverse it. We were facing it together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of what I think God's journey was for both of us, is that it's hard. We can't do anything by ourselves. We can hope that God's going to be there and he just downloads and we come, we're going to get up and we're going to change. But it's usually not the case. Usually, and in fact, in this story, it's funny, and I will love to share this. As these road trips are going on, the Tommy character, the nephew character, begins to realize that even though his uncle has been homeless, he's kind of rough. He never got into high school. He dropped out of junior high. Been in drugs and alcohol. He's been a challenge. Tommy tried to get him into residential rehab. He got in the first one, and he washed out and had to go into three or four more. As Tommy, though, began to live the life, or at least understand the life that John, his uncle, had, Tommy began to, you could see Tommy change. That this old grizzled nephew, uncle, who we all want to, we all have an uncle that wants, that wants to teach their nephew something.
Right.
But finally, this nephew character learned from the least of us, the people that we kind of walk by in life and don't think twice about, or maybe even look down towards, but we don't spend a lot of time wondering why they ended up homeless and on drugs. And yet, by opening up, Tommy opening up, he began to see parts of life, the parts of love and forgiveness. He forgave that father figure. The antagonist in the book is his father, and the brutality that he placed on the uncle character and the other characters that we talk about, the family members, and the fact that both of them face this antagonist head on a couple of times in the book, and how that was dealt with. But Tommy learned from the levels of forgiveness that John had to have towards his father. And that was life-changing to Tommy, because he was able to begin that process of forgiveness towards his father and ultimately to himself. And that's really the mission of this book. It's a beautiful story. It ends, it ends a little tragically, somewhat tragically, but it ends so satisfying. I'm so proud of the journey that these two guys went through.
Tom, could you, and I know I'm just asking you this, and would you have like anything that you'd like to read out of the book? And I know this, I'm just throwing this at you, because I get a feeling, because you've done such a great job talking about it. Would you be able to give us just a little bit of some of your book?
Wow. You caught me off guard.
Hold on.
I think that's your shtick. Is that you invite people on, and it might be short notice, there might not be, but I'm fortunate enough to be one of the short notice guys.
Exactly.
And
what we could always do is this. We're having a great fun time now. If you would like, Tom, you could record something, email it to me, and then I'll just chop it right into the episode.
Yeah.
There is a beautiful, it's the preface of the book.
Yeah, oh, perfect.
Okay, let's do that.
Perfect.
Okay.
And I am dying to find it.
Well, as you look for it, and this is, it is, it's always good, because see, this is part of what we do, obviously. Like, you know, sometimes we have musicians on, we go, hey, can you just bust out a song? Do you have a guitar right there? And they
sure
don't
I got
even
that
know
kind of warning, guys.
Right.
On the show.
but this also speaks to, I think, your character, because our show, Eric and I, we get on before we record. Then, you know, we have our guests jump on, and sometimes it feels right to ask. Sometimes it doesn't feel right to ask. Eric and I, we kind of let the show take where it wants to go.
Sure,
and I think that's part of some of the magic maybe of all this, because as in life, you know, you can't do anything perfectly, but when you tell people what you're about and what you want to do and what you're striving to do, they just kind of go along for the ride.
Well, I'd love for you to fill a little bit more airtime.
Okay. No, perfect. Perfect. Okay. No, that's good.
Ask questions, but if you got, I don't have the book on the computer because I had a never, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So actually, if you can just send us an audio file, drop it in.
Or, and then
Oh, no, wait a minute. I've got it. I got it right here.
Awesome.
Okay. Perfect.
It's I think 2 seconds.
And actually, while you're doing that, did you get emotional writing the book? Did you get lost in your thoughts?
I didn't get lost in my thoughts, but as I was doing the editing, I'd cry on the same episode or same moment.
Yeah,
I've read it 500 times, let's say, to try to get it ready for publishing publication, and I'd still hit some certain points in the book and start crying.
Wow.
I would love to think it was because I was artistic and I just nailed it, but no, it was, I think in part, there were just scenes in the book that were just so emotional and emotionally satisfying.
Right.
And also some emotionally kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And, and yet, it was a fun journey, and I'm really proud of it. Okay, guys, I'm thanking Amazon for this, because they give me the first chapter. And so I don't know how much time you're going to leave me. The first chapter is 6 pages, and I probably won't go unless you go, keep going. But, I'll start off if I can.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. It's chapter one. It's called the reconnection. Each time I planned a business trip to Tampa, my uncle Gary came to mind. The two of us were never close. I wondered if all families had a version of the mean ass, terrifying uncle of my youth. If I closed my eyes, I could hear Gary saying to his little brother, "Come on, John, let's run a coat hanger through his ears, hang him up to dry." As a kid, Gary often scared the crap out of me, and he reveled in it. His brother, my Uncle John, would often enthusiastically join in whatever evil Gary had planned, whether through fun, fear, or feloniousness. My previous visits to Central Florida centered on landing my next precious business deal. If successful, I'd receive a portion of the sizable resulting fee. Those trips were during an era when the most selfish part of my nature completely controlled my days. Get on a plane, sell a new client, cash that hefty bonus check, wash, rinse, repeat. When my lack of success in drumming up business caused me to believe that the area lacked opportunities, I thought, why ever go back? It had been weeks since I'd walked away from my job, my profession, and my career. I spent decades chasing the brass rings of life: recognition, wealth, importance, and stuff, lots of stuff. Each ring I grabbed provided temporary euphoria, followed by a recalibrated need to achieve ever higher ambitions. Each new win and associated four-figure, then five-figure, then six-figure, then seven-figure commission check I received filled a void I wasn't aware I had. But the pressure of constantly outperforming my own lofty goals had transformed me into someone I truly hated. I'm going to move forward just to keep it kind of lengthy. So it's meeting Uncle Gary, which is the brother, a half brother of the other character, John. And so I'm moving forward. My first 5 minutes of my reconnection matched memories of my uncle. Gary was my mother's brother. Mom was 14 years old and Gary a toddler when they lost their father to a drunk driver. Woody Woodward, the only father Gary would ever know, married my grandmother 2 years later, and they remained married for 45 years until her death. I could recall numerous fights between stepfather and stepson, one involving a gun and a knife. There were rumors of a bullet wound in Gary's left shoulder, though it was never substantiated. Mom told me to never mention it. Since our common past originated in Memphis, I felt that would be the best place to begin catching up. Gary, what's going on in Tennessee? First off, don't ask me anything about Woody. If I ever lay eyes on him again, I will take that Glock you found and shot him. For anything you want to know about that son of a bitch, you'll have to ask John. Check that. No mention of the stepdad will happen as long as you have that pistol within reach. Speaking of your brother, what do you hear from him? John had few living relatives, and Gary was the only one who kept in constant contact with him. Living in Florida allowed Gary to remain a safe distance from Memphis and his own brutal memories while giving occasional arm's length support to John. I talked to him the other day. He just got into a subsidized apartment in the worst part of town. It's the first time he's had a roof over his head in years. Gary sounded nonchalant, indicating the reality we both knew. John's latest move was another in a lengthy list of relocations. I totally lost track of him over the years. Where did he live before the apartment? Gary chuckled, amused that I knew so little about John's life. When I last spoke to him, he told me that before he got the apartment, he'd been sleeping in a disconnected refrigerator trailer at a deer processing plant where he's been working part-time. He crowed with pride that with the door closed, the space inside was surprisingly warm. He's got absolutely no possessions now, yet again. For Christmas, I sent him a small, cheap, flat-screen TV, some clothes, a few toiletries. I couldn't justify spending money on anything halfway nice, thinking he'd sell it for drug money. I'm pretty sure his drug use will get bad again and keep him from paying his rent, forcing his landlord to kick him out and sell his things. Gary's comment about the TV didn't fully register right away, as my mind remained locked on the deer processing refrigerator trailer bedroom visual. Did John find refuge from the winter elements next to freshly butchered deer carcasses, I thought? And I'm going to continue on to the very end of this piece that Amazon's sharing with me. Gary interrupted. It was only, okay, all right. So let me go back. The imagery Gary painted was difficult to comprehend, as the power of a person's addiction was foreign to me. I don't get it, Gary. I know you guys had a tough time growing up under Woody's roof, but your sisters got out of there without becoming drug addicts. I heard you played around with drugs a bit, but you still ended up living a normal life, productive life anyway. Gary interrupted. It was only pot, and I hadn't had a joint in years. Listen, I never got crazy with it, but John started early and just kept going. Part of me can't blame him. Woody was a lot harder on John than the rest of us. The shit that Woody did to his own son was brutal and horrifying. A couple of times I stepped in to stop him before killing John, and then Woody beat my butt until I got big enough to fight back. John was 13 when he tried his first pot. Then he started playing around with other stuff off and on. All of that turned into a bad addiction, and he's been struggling with it his entire life. But homelessness, I thought, $1 million wouldn't get him off the streets, but could be used to kill himself. I couldn't grasp the depth of John's despair, such as his need to disconnect from reality to the point where he'd jeopardize everyday comforts. Two more paragraphs, guys. John's just using drugs John's been using drugs for so long that he needs more and more to reach the feel-good level he used to get. I've done extensive research on addiction, hoping that I could say something to him that would help him. I responded, why not let him stay with you for a while, away from Memphis streets and his drug dealers? With that, with what you know about addiction, maybe he can find a way to recovery. And that's where Amazon cut it off. So
I'm hooked. Wow. Good job on them picking.
Well, thank you. I hope I articulated it right. It's been a minute since I've read it, but read it out loud.
No, you did great. I mean, I'm all in.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, I think everybody that's listening to this, because we've set up a really good setup talking about what we've been talking about. And then you read the part of your book, I think everybody listening to this should actually scrub back to maybe the first half of this episode, knowing what we talked about at the front, you know, your life and what you've been through and how it relates to your book, obviously, because it's a memoir. And then listening to you read your book just made me think about what we just talked about and how it all, and obviously it all kind of goes hand in hand, but now you've put it into a perspective and this is your book. It's absolutely amazing.
I tried to not get, I'm not a, I kind of am conservative when it comes to sharing my story and who I am, because yes, we all have a story, and I don't want my story to ever be projected out and from me as being more dramatic or more important or more anything. The book is about my Uncle John's journey. Yeah. And he allowed me to be a part of it, and he opened up, and it was, and if he hadn't opened up, if he said, no, Tommy, leave me alone, I don't want to share, I just want to do my drugs, or maybe I can get some help, but I'm really not engaged in it, I don't know how hard I would have fought to say, let me help you, let me chronicle our experience here so that you've got something to kind of go back to. That was the original mission here. What, again, the original mission was not to write a book. Right. The original mission was for me to kind of wash myself out. And the minute I reconnected with my uncle, it didn't become about me. It became about him. Then it became about people we cared about. And then it eased into becoming about me, because I was changing during the process. So I'm really guarded by just making sure that I don't overdo my part of this, that I was very blessed to have been invited in. Well, not invited. I was forced in by God. Let's call it, go back to that first part. Yeah. I would call it forced in, and he got my shoulders and he shook me. But really the story evolved from this John character, that is just a beautiful character, hard character. You shake your head going, man, you dummy, why did you do all this? And yet, if you read the story, you'll see that there's some victory in the end, in more ways than one. And it's really an amazing ending to it.
Yes, I do know, before we start wrapping up, Eric, Tom, this episode is a bit like your book. A lot of unexpected twists and turns, especially when we started asking you about reading some of it.
That was a twist there, Larry. You exactly, really put me on a spot. I hope I delivered.
You did in spades, brother.
Say, you know, you. We were talking about pretty heavy subject matter, but there was an odd coziness to this episode. It felt like putting on a warm sweater and just, you know, kicking back, smoking a cigar and talking.
Yeah.
Well, there's a quote, there's an endorsement. I've got to have to find that. I don't want to waste your time, but it said that when he read it, he laughed and he cried, and it allowed him to be the man that he was destined to be, or God made him to be. And again, I'm not sure that this book will land in the Christian section of a bookstore. It is certainly a heavy influence there, but
it's not supposed to, Tom, because you're preaching to the choir if that happens.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
but it's got some language that wouldn't necessarily neatly fit against Max Lucado or anybody or Billy Graham, but it's a story of two guys who are trying to figure it out, and God stepped in. And we didn't know what God was about. We kind of knew we're supposed to, there is a God, we're supposed to follow Christ. Neither of us knew what the Holy Spirit was. But we kind of learned from our own experiences, and then others can begin to walk beside us. So it's a neat story that really, again, Christian influence, but maybe not center in the Christian section of a bookstore.
Yes,
and again,
I love
it's not
that.
Supposed
yeah, it's
to be
not,
because you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. It's a street version of two guys finding their peace through a Christian journey. That's probably
I love it. You know. And actually, I am on your website, which is worth mentioning. And where were the links to? Where will the links be, Eric?
I haven't said this in so long. All of the links will be in the description if you're listening in on Anchor. And when the
Yes.
episode goes up, we will make sure to tag Tom and all of his links into the post.
Thank you.
Yes. And so is it from Larry Green,
It is.
founder
It
of
is. Yeah.
Cloud Walk
Cloudwalk.
Ministries?
Right.
Yes. If I could, it's from your website, from punishmenttopeace.com. And this is his quote: "It is incredibly rare that we find words and we find a story that are so real, so honest, so vulnerable, that in the worst pain of life, we find the true meaning of life. By reading this book, I have been changed at a soul level by their lives and their journey." Wow. As I turned the pages, I cried, I laughed, and I read about men. This is the cool part. And I read about men who gave me permission to be more of who I truly am meant to be.
Wow.
Wowzers. That,
And I think, that's the perfect way to end this episode.
man.
Tom, I'm from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for coming on. Like we said at the top of the show, it's been a rough start of the year for me, but having this conversation, you was just so
Beautiful.
cozy, is
Yeah.
the best way a guy could put it. It
Yeah.
felt like speaking with an old friend. The links to where you can purchase the book, again, we'll post them everywhere we can think of. And again, Tom, thank you so much for coming on.
You are a blessing.
It
Thank you,
really, really
gentlemen.
was.
Oh, I'm so honored to have been a part of this. So, the great journey here. So, thank you, guys.
Thank
Yes.
you so much. And everybody, like we say each and every week on the show, remember, support our troops.